Welcome to Tribe Talk, presented by Progressive, making it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Brought to you by Subway, where winners eat.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Tribe Talk. Jim Rosenhaus along with you this weekend as we begin a two-part series, a look back at the 1948 World Series, the last time the Indians were World Series champions. This is a replay of last year's show, something that we hope to make a holiday time tradition as these next 2 weeks, right around Christmas and then New Year's, obviously a very slow time for hard baseball news, so we thought we would take you back to the late 1940s, the 1948 season, a great year for the Tribe. They needed to win a one-game playoff against the Red Sox to get into the World Series, and they would meet the Boston Braves in what turned out to be a six-game series in early October 1948. When we come back, we'll be joined by Indians Vice President Bob DiBiasio, one of the great historians for Cleveland Indians baseball, and he'll help us fill in the blanks on what was a great time in Tribe history. That's coming your way shortly as Tribe Talk gets rolling on the Cleveland Indians Radio Network. Welcome back to Tribe Talk, and we are very pleased to bring you two special shows the next 2 weeks, talking about the 1948 World Series, last time the Cleveland Indians won a World Series. We're joined by Indians Vice President Bob DiBiasio. And Bobby D, it's always fun in so many ways to look back at history, especially in this great game of baseball. And 1948, pretty special season for the Tribe.
Well, one thing fans of today, Rosie, should remember, well, back in 1948, they went 20-6 in September, having to play the Boston Red Sox in a historic playoff game, the first ever in the American League. But let's just go back to 1948 and talk about that baseball team. Tribes coming off a 47 season, a 1947 season, in which they had a winning record. They went 80-74, but they finished in fourth place, 17 games behind the pennant-winning New York Yankees at that time. And we moved to 1948. Lou Boudreau's the manager. He is the player manager of the baseball team. It's his seventh season as player manager for the Cleveland Indians. It all began in 1942 at the age of 24. Think about that, Rosie. At the age of 24, Bill Veeck tabs him as his player manager, a shortstop, no less, a demanding position. But at 24, he leads a group, and he's now in his seventh year and is a 30-year-old leading the Indians eventually on to a World Series.
And how they got to that point was unique for that period of time. Extremely unusual during that time that the Indians would have to go through that to get to the World Series.
1948 Indians, they post a record of 96-58, but it only ties them with the Boston Red Sox for the American League pennant, making necessary the first ever playoff game in American League history. But before we dive into that historic playoff game and the World Series victory, let's share with our audience some fun facts about the 48 season, Rosie. The Tribe scores 140 runs back then in 154 games. You score 800 more runs nowadays, you're doing well. And they only allowed 568. Think about that differential. It's almost 300 run differential, which showed their dominance. 2.6 million fans were attracted to Cleveland Municipal Stadium, tops in the American League. Nobody had attracted that many fans at that time, so obviously Cleveland fans really went at it.
Stay with us. We'll be back with the first pitch and the top half of the first inning when we return after this timeout as Tribe Talk continues on the Cleveland Indians Radio Network. Welcome back to Tribe Talk. Jim Rosenhaus along with Indians Vice President Bob DiBiasio as we take a look back at the 1948 World Series. Last time the Indians won the World Championship, defeating the Boston Braves 4-2. And we are going to feature Game 3, the first home game for the Tribe in that year's Fall Classic. In just a moment, we'll pick it up in the top half of the first inning. But Bobby D, just to get there, and we touched on it a little bit in our first segment, wasn't easy for the Tribe despite having a great season.
Right, again, 96 wins. But let's set the scene again for the audience on how we got to the historic playoff game in which Gene Bearden, Lou Boudreau shocked everyone by naming Gene Bearden the rookie southpaw to start that historic playoff game. Go back to September 19th. The Indians are 2.5 games back of the Boston Red Sox. We're playing a Sunday doubleheader at Municipal Stadium. 75,382 fans. 75,382 fans. The Tribe wins both games of the doubleheader, and the Red Sox end up dropping a doubleheader at Detroit. So now the Tribe is just a half a game out of first place with 10 games to go. The Red Sox come to visit Cleveland just a few days later on September 22nd. It's a makeup game, a one-game makeup game on a Wednesday night in Cleveland. 76,772 cheer on Bob Feller as he pitches the Tribe to victory.
Big walk-up crowd that night?
Big walk-up crowd that night. The two teams are now tied, Rosie, at the top of the American League. The final four games of the 1948 season, the Red Sox end up winning all four. They go 4-0. The Tribe goes 2-2, and they're tied at the end of the season with identical 96 and 58 records. And Lou Boudreau, again, shocks everyone when he chooses southpaw Gene Bearden to start the game on just one day's rest. Unbelievable. Think about that in today's terms, one day rest. The player manager, Lou Boudreau himself, went 4-for-4 in that historic game with two home runs. So just one of the more remarkable games in American League history.
And you mentioned the name Gene Bearden when the World Series, after beginning in Boston, the home field for the Braves, Game 3 was in Cleveland. The series was tied at one win apiece, and Gene Bearden was on the hill as we pick up the radio broadcast in the top half of the first inning.
To review the series so far, Johnny Fain bested Bob Feller in the first game by a score of 1-0. And yesterday, Bob Lemon came back to pitch superbly against the Boston Braves and set them down with one unearned run and 8 hits. While for Boston, Spahn, Barrett, and Potter toiled, Spahn taking the defeat. Tommy Holmes will be the first man up for the National League champions, and he has one hit in 8 official trips to the plate. He drove in the winning run in the first game, you'll recall, and today he'll be looking at something he hasn't seen in the National League, namely a southpaw knuckler, because Bearden throws a good knuckleball. Holmes is a left-hander. Left-handed Bearden gets that. Here's the first pitch, and it's outside, a fastball for ball one. There was no batting practice, nor was there any infield practice because of the inclement weather. The tarpaulin was on the field and was removed only at the last moment, and there were all kinds of wild rumors about the postponement of the game, none of which was based on fact. The outfield is set to the left a bit, and there seems to be apparently no wind. Whatever there is blowing out toward left center. Here's the pitch. There's a drive that goes on the first hop to Boudreau. His quick throw to Eddie Robinson is in time for the first out of the game. It was a line drive that kicked up the dirt at the feet of the Cleveland manager. And Tommy Holmes is out 6-3, short to first. Alvin Dark, the Braves shortstop, comes up. He has a total of just one hit in 8 official trips to the plate. The Braves, of course, have had only 10 hits so far in the series play, while Cleveland has had 12. There are persons still arriving here, and it's far from filled at the moment, but it is, of course, a sellout. Bearden winds up to pitch to Dark, the first pitch. That took off. That might have been a knuckleball. It was high and wide to a right-handed batter, and the count is one ball. You never saw such confusion in your life as a result of the late arrival of the train. Cleveland was a veritable madhouse. Bearden winds up. Here's the pitch. Swing and a miss. 1-1. That was a curveball that broke over to a right-hand batter. Johnny Cooney is doing the coaching for the Braves at first base, and Billy Southworth, the Boston manager, is doing the coaching at third. The Braves, of course, are wearing their uniforms of traveling gray, and today the Clevelanders are wearing their white home uniforms. The windup, the pitch, low for ball two. Two balls, one strike to count. The scoreboard is in dead center field, and because of the batting background, that section is unoccupied. It's all green, and an excellent background is provided for the batters. Bearden takes his windup. Here's the pitch. Foul ball. That comes back into the crowd, and the count is two balls and two strikes. In the on-deck circle is Mike McCormick. Jeff Heath, broken ankle and crutches, is still with the Boston Braves. He's a former Clevelander, you know. When the Braves arrived this morning, there were approximately 15,000 gathered at the depot, hopeful that the first contingent would be their own beloved Cleveland Indians. Two and two, the count on Dart. He stands straight away. Here's the pitch. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It was a curveball. And Dart strikes out. That's the second out of the first inning. And Mike McCormick comes up. Mike McCormick has been at bat six times in the series and has two hits. He got two of the eight hits Boston collected yesterday. And Earl Torgerson, who is not in this batting order, got two more. McCormick is a right-hander from Ventura, California. The outfield straight away, not deep. Here's the pitch from Bearden, and it's a swing and a miss. He threw in a tantalizing slow curveball. McCormick seemed to be off balance and swung rather anemically at it, and the count is one strike. There are two men out, nobody on. The outfield not deep. The deepest is left fielder Dale Mitchell. The pitch, swing and a miss. Fast curveball that broke down almost in the dirt. Bearden has been great for the Indians this year. The greatest game he pitched was that five-hitter, the payoff game against the Boston Red Sox last Monday, the game that brought Cleveland its first league championship in 28 years. Bearden says yes to the sign, winds up, fires one, strike three, swinging. Bearden turned in a great first inning. No runs, no hits, no errors, and none left for the Braves. The score is nothing-nothing.
So the teams were scoreless heading to the bottom half of the first inning. We'll pick it up with some run-scoring action for the Tribe and what would turn out to be a 2-0 victory in front of their home fans in Game 3 of the 1948 World Series when we return after this break on the Indians Radio Network. Welcome back to Tribe Talk. Jim Rosenhaus along with you, joined by Indians Vice President Bob DiBiasio as we take a look back at the 1948 World Series, the Indians winning the world title 4-2 over the Boston Braves. And we are listening in to portions of Game 3, the game underway. We had listened to the top half of the first inning, and we'll pick things up in the bottom of the fourth inning with the Indians in front by a score of 1-0, looking for some insurance. And Bobby D, they would get that insurance thanks to an RBI single from Jim Hegan, the Indians catcher, and obviously the dad of former great broadcaster and good friend Mike Hegan. His dad, not necessarily known as a force in the lineup offensively, but man, what he did behind the plate was something special.
Yeah, Mike's dad, Mr. Jim Hegan, was considered the best defensive catcher in baseball at that time, and any offense he gave you was just the cherry on the top of the sundae, and a big RBI in Game 3 of the 48 World Series to give the Tribe a 2-0 lead, that extra insurance run. It was the first World Series game in Cleveland since 1920. 70,000 people were on hand to watch that game. What a thrilling night it had to be for Mr. Hegan.
And when you look at, you had mentioned earlier, the run differential for that year's team and how strong the pitching staff was, in addition to having an sometimes prolific offensive lineup, but pitching-wise, he's handling a staff that has Bob Feller, Gene Bearden, Bob Lemon, who would pitch the clincher in Game 6. These are some names that you need a good catcher back there calling the game, right?
Well, Feller and Lemon, they're 1-2 in strikeouts that year. I mean, just remarkable. Bob Lemon had a remarkable season. He led the league with, believe it or not, 10 shutouts. Bob Lemon pitched 10 shutouts to lead the league that year, 293 innings pitched. Yeah, he And then he goes on to be the catcher for the Big Four in 54. I mean, Jim was one of the great players in Indians history.
Now let's listen in to the bottom half of the fourth inning. Again, it's Game 3 of the 1948 World Series. The Indians and Boston Braves. Tribe in front by a score of 1-0 heading into the bottom of the fourth as we pick up the action.
Cleveland has a 1-0 lead. Despite the fact the Indians have been out hit by the Braves, 3-1, Bearden has been very effective. The pitch, and that's outside. Keltner was all set to swing and decided to let that fast one go. It's 3-0. And again, Billy Southworth has given the wag sign to the bullpen, and Bill Voisel starts winding up. He's a big right-hander, the ex-Giant. The wind-up, Bickford pitches. Ball four. That's the fifth base on ball Bickford has given in three full innings. He's been wild, but he has been effective. Had there been perfect support, we'd be watching a nothing-nothing baseball game. But Cleveland cashed in the break. In the first game, it was the Braves who cashed in the break. And yesterday, break or not, Lemon was too good. Walt Jednick, the right fielder, is the batter. He got the second base on balls his first time up. He has no hits in four World Series trips. And he's a left-hander. Strike called, a curveball that curved over the outside corner. Walter is wearing a turtleneck sweater, as is Bill McKechnie, and as are some of the other Indians. The outfield is deep to the right. Tommy Holmes in right field is out on the track at the 300-foot mark. The pitch, fastball high, 1-1. They played Jednick as a full hitter. One ball, one strike. This is the last of the fourth, with Cleveland leading the Braves in the third game of the World Series, 1-0. Here it comes. There's a high foul ball that is going out of play. Back into the stands, about 20 feet beyond Macy's reach, to the right of the screen, back of the plate. One ball, two strikes. Clint Canaster apparently has been waved over even more deeply into right center field. And he's stationed at about the 350-foot mark. About 30 feet short of the 380-foot sign. Victor takes a stretch. Keltner leads off first. Strike three, swinging. That was a curveball that seemed to take off. It had a liveness about it. And that's the first strikeout for Victor. One man out, first baseman Eddie Robinson comes up. He flied out to left field, his first time at bat. He has one hit in seven trips. Bickford comes from New Canton, Virginia. A right-hander, he pitches, and there's a drive to left field for a base hit. And it is held to a single, with Keltner stopping at second as a result of alert fielding by left fielder Mike McCormick. Three of the Braves went over to back up at third base. That was hit on a line, and it gives Robinson 2 out of 8 for the series. That is the second Cleveland hit. Jim Hegan, the Cleveland catcher, comes up. He has one hit in seven trips. His first time up in this game, he fouled out to the catcher. Outfield moves around to the left a bit. Voisel continues to bear down, warming up. Here's the pitch. There's a drive that goes to center for a base hit. Canaster fields it on the second block. Here's the throw to third, and it's 2-0 in favor of Cleveland. Keltner had no trouble sprinting all the way to the plate. And rather than throw to the plate and give Robinson an opportunity to go all the way to third base, Canaster threw to third base. So there are runners on first and second. Hegan has driven in a run. The second Cleveland run of the game, the sixth Cleveland run of the series. The Indians lead 2-0, and Gene Herron comes up. The infield is in a little on the left side. Bearden doubled and scored a run his last time at bat. There's still just one man out. There's a drive.
So the Indians had a 2-0 lead after four innings of play. Stay with us. We'll come back and listen to the top half of the ninth inning as the Tribe tries to wrap up Game 3 and take a 2-1 lead back in the 1948 World Series. That's after this break as Tribe Talk continues on the Cleveland Indians Radio Network. Welcome back to Tribe Talk. Jim Rosenhaus back with you this weekend. The first of our two-part series looking back at the 1948 World Series. The last time the Indians won the World Series championship. I'll be rejoined by Indians Vice President Bob DiBiasio shortly for our continuing look at the early stages of that World Series, and then we'll have the conclusion of that series on next week's show. A couple of news and notes and reminders. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, you can do so. At Indians Radio is our Twitter address. Always great to hear from you on Twitter, and we'll provide the very latest on this program and any news and information regarding the Indians radio broadcasts between now and spring training, and then, of course, during spring training and on into the regular season. So follow us on Twitter. At Indians Radio is our Twitter address. And don't forget, Tribe Fest coming up the weekend of January the 24th and 25th. Hope to see you down at the ballpark as once again the Indians will be welcoming so many of their fans to just a great event. It'll be the third annual event now, and there'll be Indians alums. Many of the key players on this year's roster will be there. In fact, as we heard on last week's show, just recently, the Indians able to announce that Corey Kluber will be on hand. The American League Cy Young Award winner able to fit it in his schedule, and it's a busy one, and we say that, why wouldn't he be at TriFest? Well, there are some award dinners that weekend in New York City for Corey Kluber to attend, but he's going to make Tribe Fest a part of that weekend as well. So he'll be there for a portion of Tribe Fest. And so will Michael Brantley, as he's been able to clear his schedule, and he'll be on hand too. The player who finished third in the American League Most Valuable Player Award voting. And we're very pleased to announce that Kluber and Brantley will be on hand for Tribe Fest, along with a good portion of the rest of the Major League roster. So if you want the very latest in terms of tickets, and it is much recommended to get online and purchase them early, you get the free kids tickets. If you do that, go to Indians.com/TribeFest. And you'll be all set to go. So Tribe Fest, January the 24th and 25th. Everything you need to know regarding Tribe Fest at Indians.com/TribeFest. This is the first of two shows taking a look back at the 1948 World Series, in which the Indians defeated the Boston Braves, complete with some of the live radio coverage from that game. Mel Allen and Jim Britt, the broadcasters on the national radio broadcast of that Fall Classic back in 1948. We pick things up. Indians leading 2-0 in Game 3. The series is tied at one win apiece, and we head to the top half of the ninth inning.
Going into the top of the ninth inning at Municipal Stadium in Cleveland. And it's the top of the order for the Boston Braves. They trail 2-0. And it's Tommy Holmes up there, left-hand hitter. 0-for-3 on the afternoon. Grounded short, bounced out to the pitcher, and grounded second. Gene Bearden throws high inside for ball one to Tommy. Tommy Holmes, a 5'10", 175-pounder from Brooklyn, New York. Lou Boudreau moves Larry Doby over into straightaway center. Larry was over into left center.
Kenny Keller laying in close at third in anticipation of a possible bunt. Gene Burden delivers. Tommy Holmes looks at a fastball that's right in there for a call strike. Wasn't too fast. Got the inside corner just above the knees. Joe Gordon's laying two strides to the right of second, deep. Eddie Robinson at first base. Line of the line, about 15 feet. Here's your pitch. Swung on, hit foul down the third baseline. It's Tommy Holmes trying to hit in the left field. There's a man leaning over a field box out there trying to get that ball for a souvenir. He not only did not get the ball, but he lost his hat and has to call the stadium attendant over to give him his fedora. One ball, two strikes to count now on Tommy Holmes, leading off in the top of the ninth inning. Outfield shades him slightly toward left. Gene Burden delivers. Holmes swings and fouls it off to the left of the plate and to the left of our broadcasting booth into the upper deck. And it's a souvenir for somebody. Holmes trying to get the same type of hit, and he got in the eighth inning of the first game to win that ball game for the Braves, 1-0. A line drive down the left field line. Left-hander Gene Burden ready. Throws. Holmes takes that knuckler, but it's inside. And court low, and the count is 2-2. Two balls, two strikes. Top of the ninth inning, 2-0, favor of Cleveland. Gene Burden ready. Boy that was born in Helena, Arkansas. Delivers a pitch that swung on, hit back to the mound, grabbed a one hop by Burden, throws on over to Eddie Robinson, and Tommy Holmes is out. Burden to Robinson. So there's one down on the top of the ninth inning as Al Dark comes to the plate. Burden lives in Los Angeles, California now, but he was born in Helena, Arkansas. He's sort of an Irish Indian extraction. And you know, the weather has brightened beautifully. Lots of blue in the sky now. After all morning rain, sun is out. Gene Burden ready. Pitching to the right hand, hitting Al Dark. Low into the dirt. Ball one. One ball, no strike. Outfield playing Dark toward left. Not too extreme. Infield shaded around toward third. Dark struck out, flying to right, and doubled to left in that order. Burden into his windup, throws. There's the pitch that swung on, hit out, over to second. There's Gordon back to the bank, up to the ball, close to first, in time, 40 out. Joe Gordon with the flash of all there as Al Dark hits that ball right back through the middle, out over second. But as we had told you, the infield was shaded around toward third. But even so, Joe Gordon had to flash to his right, come up with that ball, in behind the bag deep, and after all, Dark is a speedy man, had to get the ball away in a hurry to retire. So they're two down in the ninth inning. Cleveland leading 2-0, and the batter is Mike McCormick, who struck out, single to center, and popped the second. Gene Burden throws a pitch that swung on and missed. Strike one. It was a tumble-down knuckler. Outfield plays him to pull. Again ready, throws. Pitch is swung on, foul off upstairs, out of play. Hit right in front of the press box and bounded back down on the playing field. It is now approximately 25 minutes to 3 Eastern Standard Time. Ball game got underway at 1 o'clock. Now in 35 minute ball game so far. Rather fast game, as was the first one. Gene Burden throws, pitch high outside. And the count now is one ball, two strikes on Mike McCormick. Two outs in the top of the ninth inning. Cleveland leading the Braves 2-0. Gene Burden, great figure on the mound, into the windup. Round comes the left arm. The pitch is high outside. Burden trying to get Mike McCormick to go after a bad pitch. And now Jimmy Hegan decides it's all time to walk out to talk to Burden. Try to settle him down. Come on, Gene. Don't try to get over too much in a hurry. Just take your time. Two balls, two strikes, two outs. We've not had too much confirmation, so to speak, as regards tomorrow's pitchers. Shouldn't be at all surprised to see maybe Sane and Feller right back at it. That's sheer speculation at the present time. Now the pitch. And it's high for ball three. It's over the outside corner, but high. So you got a full count now on Mike McCauley. With two down, top of the ninth inning. Nobody on, and the Braves behind two runs. Gene Bearden into his windup, the payoff pitch. It swung on and grounded foul off to the left of the plate with Billy Southworth scooping it up. Bob Elliott on deck will hit next if Mike McCormick gets on. The series thus far has been marked primarily by outstanding pitching for the most part. Gene Bearden ready. And the payoff pitch is swung on. It's a pop-off out towards short. Lou Boudreau's under it, and he makes the catch. Score of 2-0, and the Indian players all run up and grab the hand of Gene Bearden. The photographers rush the pitcher and the group of Indians, and the flashlight of the bulb flash, and pictures are taken of a elated Indian as they win the third game of the series behind the five-hit pitching and shutout pitching of Gene Bearden.
So the Indians win it by that 2-0 score to take a 2-1 lead. And Bobby D, the series far from over, obviously, but two more games left in Cleveland. And you had mentioned last segment, 70,000 on hand for game three. And that was chump change compared to what they had the next two games. People turned down in bigger numbers than that, numbers that you'd never see in Major League Baseball.
81,897 pack Municipal Stadium down on the lakefront for game four. On Saturday, October 9th, the Cleveland Indians, again, in a pitcher's duel, win 2-1. Just an incredible effort by the Tribe's Steve Gromek. He outduels Johnny Sane for the 2-1 win. Lou Boudreau's one of the hitting stars once again. Larry Doby, of course, one of the stars of all-stars of the 48 Club, drives in a run with a 410-foot home run. Just it had to be incredibly electric. Just think about it. 81,000 fans in a 2-1 ball game where you're hanging on every pitch in a World Series game. That just had to be remarkable.
And you would figure it to be the case for a team that wins the World Series. But the names that you're rattling off, we've talked about. Bob Feller, Bob Lemon, Lou Boudreau, Larry Doby, some of the greats in the game at their time.
Absolutely. One of the things, if you know, go back and look at the 1948 season, and Lou Boudreau ends up second in batting to the great Ted Williams. The splendid splinter hits 369 to lead the league, and Lou Boudreau is second with a 355 batting average. Third that year was outfielder Dale Mitchell of the Cleveland Indians, who hit 336. So just remarkable. Joe DiMaggio leads the league that year with 39 home runs. Indians infielders Joe Gordon and Kenny Keltner, second and third base, they were second and third in the league in home runs with 32 and 31. Just a remarkable, as you say, the great names in baseball lore. But I just come back to a 2-1 ball game, 81,000 fans riding on every pitch. What a wonderful day at the ballpark that had to be in Cleveland, Ohio.
And that set up a chance for the Indians to win the World Series at home the following day, a Sunday afternoon. And they packed him in again, but it didn't quite go as expected.
No, Bob Feller, unfortunately, did not have a very good day. The Boston Braves brought out the bats. They unleashed 12 hits in an 11-5 win and stopped the Cleveland fans from celebrating at home a World Series victory. 86,288 saw Warren Spahn beat Bob Feller in that game, but we had to get it done the very next day, or we were able to get it done the very next day in Boston in Game 6 on Monday, October 11th. Only 40,000 in Little Braves Field were at the game when the Indians ended up winning 4-3.
So they did that the next day. We have to wait a week, and we will review that game and the Indians winning their World Series in 1948 next week. Bobby D., great to have you with us. Have an outstanding Christmas, and we'll catch up with you again next week.
Merry Christmas, and a happy and healthy New Year to you and yours, Rosie.
This is Tribe Talk, and again, we'll be back with the clincher, Game 6 from Boston of the 1948 World Series for the Tribe on next week's show. Until then, this is Jim Rosenhaus reminding you that you've been listening to Tribe Talk on the Cleveland Indians Radio Network.
He forgot and never brought to mind. Should old acquaintance be forgot and days of old lang syne? For auld lang syne, my dear, for auld lang syne, for auld lang syne, may all acquaintance
listening to Tribe Talk, presented by Progressive, making it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Brought to you by Subway, where winners eat.